there's the walk-up music for our next guest, Bill English. And that, of course, is Huey Lewis in the news. Power of Love. And you know it's his birthday today. Huey Lewis is 67.
He was
born in 1950.
Really?
Yes.
I would not have thought he was a day over 65.
Huh? There you go.
There you go.
So let's talk about 10 things business owners do that will demoralize their employees and make them crazy. Let me throw out some scripture.
Yeah.
And I'm going to let you work backwards.
Yeah.
All right? So in Matthew 5:37, it says, but let your statement be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything beyond these is of evil.
This applies to business owners and managers, quite frankly, who are moving targets. And people who say, this week I want you to take this hill. And next week I want you to take that other hill. And the week after that I want you to take that valley. And they keep changing and randomizing the focus of their staff or their employees. It's better just to come down and say, look, this is what we're doing, and stay with it. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. After that, now in the context of this verse, it was talking about taking oaths. And so the anything beyond these is of evil refers to taking of an oath.
Mm-hmm.
But the yes, yes, no, no also says just be a person of your word and stick with what you say. Don't keep changing what you think and believe and say in order to meet the need of the moment.
Mm-hmm. What if the business leader, though, is trying to adapt and he says, well, like, we're going to have a change of course and we have to try this now? Maybe that's just him trying to figure out
change
how to do
of course. Change of course is fine if you need to change the course. But as a leader, what I often say is, look, for now, we're going to focus on this, but if I get this other information that I'm planning on getting, it may change my mind, and at that point I'll pull you all together and we'll talk about it again. So you kind of pre-warn them, or you set the table that there might be a change in the future.
Okay.
But if you're not doing that in a respectful way to people, it just confuses your staff to say, I want you to focus on A today, and tomorrow I want you to focus on B, when A is still a real problem or still a real focus of attention.
Some egotistical bosses will say, though, but I'm the boss.
Yeah, some egotistical bosses will say that, and arrogance is never good in a leader.
Okay, how about this verse, Ecclesiastes 7, verse 9, do not be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the lap of fools.
You know what's interesting here is that a number of owners and a number of managers, when they don't get their way, they get angry. And they can get angry over minor infractions. They can get angry over having a very little tolerance for normal differences of opinion. And oftentimes, since they don't know how to manage conflict or manage employees in a mature way, they end up going away and just kind of fuming to themselves. And they get themselves in a funk, kind of a bad mood. And they spend way too much emotional energy and thinking time on how bad their employees are. That's really a childish way to act. And so what I would suggest is that anger is not something that really belongs in a leader, at least not easily provoked, quickly provoked to anger. Now, sometimes anger is a necessary emotion. Excuse me. For the most part, we should not be people who are leading through anger. We should be people who are leading through principle and direct communication and giving people a carrot out there to go after.
Mm-hmm. They will also think of the boss then as a moody person and probably walk around on eggshells. And that's not a good work environment either, is it?
No, it's not. It creates a work environment where you suppress success and you suppress risk. And therefore, all you get is failure. Or just mediocrity, one of the two.
Okay. Let's look at Isaiah chapter 13, verse 11. It says, I will punish the world for its evil, the wicked for their sins. I will put an end to the arrogance of the haughty and will humble the pride of the ruthless.
A lot of managers, a lot of business owners have a very low opinion. I shouldn't say a lot. Some have a very low opinion of their employees and a high opinion of themselves. And that kind of arrogance does bleed through. It does get communicated to the staff over time through their attitudes and their actions. And the staff knows that they are just not valued, that their opinions aren't valued, that their new ideas aren't valued, that these are things that that the owner or the manager really doesn't want to hear about. And so they they keep those good ideas to themselves, and as a result, the business or the organization suffers. So God is saying here, basically, that arrogance is sin, and it really doesn't have a place in the life of the Christian business owner.
I like it. And then I always think of this Dick Cavett line, which I've always loved. It's a rare man who wants to hear what he doesn't want to hear.
It's a rare leader who says, tell me the unvarnished truth. Give me the last 10%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I'm building a management team, that's one of the phrases I use is, you got to give me the last 10%. So if people will often tell you 80 or 90% of what they think, but that last 10 that's really touchy, mm-hmm. that gets to the elephant in the room, they'll yeah. avoid it. And so I go around the room at the end of every management team meeting. Have you given me the last 10%?
Yeah. It's like doctors talk about when they put their hand on the doorknob to leave. That's when they get the most important question.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when I was a psychologist, that was sometimes when I would get the greatest truth from a client at the end of a session on their way out the door.
Yeah. Okay. We want to pick up this conversation after the break. We're talking to Bill English about the top 10 things business owners do that can demoralize their people. And we're doing this from a scriptural standpoint, which is what makes it so fascinating for me. All right. It's 14 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back. More with Bill English. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living. Imagine Dolly Parton singing that. That would be helpful to today's conversation. I have Bill English in studio. And at just the 11th hour, he requested that song. We just couldn't get it up fast.
I was just, okay, all right, you're right.
There's always next time.
I requested it too late. I should have.
That's okay.
I should have just sent you the bumper over the weekend.
There's right. always next time. I'll pull it out when you least expect it.
Okay.
All right, I want to try to get through all of these, Bill. So let's put our foot on the pedal here. Proverbs 17:28 says, even fools are thought wise if they keep silent and discerning if they hold their tongues.
You know, I have met owners and managers who have a real problem of being afraid of being seen as incompetent. So when they're asked a question to which they don't know the answer, they'll often make one up. They'll kind of blow smoke. They'll blow hot air. And in an effort to appear knowledgeable and in control, they'll think they're fooling other people, but they're really not. Better to just say, I don't know,
mm-hmm.
or better to say, let's just look at that. Stay silent, be discerning.
Mm-hmm. All right. The ways of fools seem right to them, but the wise listen to advice. That's Proverbs 12:15.
It is Proverbs 12:15. Business owners and managers should listen to the advice of those who are their direct reports. And a lot of them just do not have the ability to do that. Or whatever advice they hear, they automatically discount because you don't have the same experience I have. You haven't been in the industry as long as I have. You don't have the education that I have, so forth and so on. So it's really important, I think, for business owners and managers, if they're going to be managing people, to listen to the advice of their direct reports and to say to them, I value what you think. I value your input. Please give it to me.
All right. Here's another one out of 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 11. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact you are doing.
I am surprised at how few people get thanked for doing a good job.
Me too.
I am surprised at how many people are not encouraged or get a pat on the back when they do a good job. It's as if employers say, well, if you do a good job, that's what I pay you to do. Why should I say anything more? And I would just say one of the things that you can do in your office or on your team is to go around and say, hey, thank you for doing a great job. Thank you for what you did there. And give people some encouragement. People are not encouraged in this society. They're beat down. They are criticized. They are demoralized. They are rarely encouraged. And that encouragement and thank you can go a long way.
You know, you see a guy hit a home run in Major League Baseball, and he comes back to the dugout, and everybody has to high-five him.
Oh, yeah.
And the coach could say, well, or the owner could say, that's what I pay you to do is hit home runs.
Or the owner could say, hey, thanks for hitting the home run. That helped us win the game.
Yeah. But let's be celebratory and generous with compliments.
Yeah.
And encouragement.
I agree.
All right. Let's move on to 1 Timothy 5:8. For Scripture says, do not muzzle an ox while it is treading out the grain. Worker deserves his wages.
He does. This really touches two parts of management. One is not resourcing our people properly. When we give them a responsibility, I want you to go take that hill, but I'm not going to give you the decision-making authority to do it. I'm not going to give you the budget. You're not going to have spending authority. What you're really doing is muzzling the ox.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're really doing is saying to that person, I want you to succeed, but I don't trust you to make the important decisions along the way to succeed.
All right, Bill, what happens when the boss gives a person that decision-making ability, but the boss looks and says, and thinks that's not the right decision he's making, I have to intervene? Then what?
The boss should just look at the outcome.
But the outcome stinks.
Well, then if the outcome stinks, then you need to either coach the employee or you need to remove them. But you cannot let employees succeed without giving them rope to hang themselves. You cannot,
so
you cannot
gonna,
do one
you're
without
gonna,
the other.
As a boss, watch the person make a bad decision and hurt the company in the way to teach a lesson.
Potentially. It depends on the size of the hurt and the type of damage that is done to the company. But look, I'll say it again. You cannot give an employee an opportunity to genuinely succeed at something without giving them the opportunity to genuinely risk and genuinely fail.
Okay. What about that employee then that's given that responsibility? Is that employee have an obligation to go to the boss and say, I'm on the cusp of making this decision. Are you good with it?
It would be wise to do that. It would also be wise for that employee to get other coaching outside of that relationship with their boss so that they know how to handle themselves.
Within the company or outside the company?
Either.
Okay.
Either. I don't care about that, where that other coaching comes from. But it's, I will just say it again. You cannot give an opportunity to genuinely succeed without giving an opportunity to genuinely fail.
Okay. Fair enough. All right, let's look at Luke 19, verses 12 to 27. And I'll just get it started, the parable of the 10 talents where the master entrusts wealth to several servants, then leaves and gives them the opportunity to grow his money.
Right. So this is that parable, 10 minas, 10 talents, whatever you want to call it. And this is the situation where the master gives 10 to 1, 5 to 1, and 2 to the other. Mm-hmm. And the 5 and 10 make money, and the one with 2 or 1 talent, they hit it under a rock. And we all know that parable. Look. The point out of that story that I took was that the master gave substantial sums of money to his servants and said, go produce a profit with this. And then what did the master do? He took off.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Tahiti. It was straight up palm trees and Mai Tais for this guy,
mm-hmm.
right? You know,
mm-hmm.
And then he's coming back later on and he's saying, okay, how did you do? The point is that he didn't micromanage his employees. He gave them an objective. He resourced them properly and then he let them go do their work. He gave them the opportunity to genuinely succeed, and two of them did, and one of them did not, and he responded appropriately in both situations.
Mm-hmm. I remember a story, you probably know this story, Tom Watson from IBM, when he was in charge of it, had an employee that made a mistake that was cost the company about $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
Guy gets back to his office and sees a slip from Mr. Watson to come to his office, and he assumed he was going to get fired, and Watson said, no, I just spent $2 million training you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let you take that valuable training experience and go somewhere else.
Right. And that is the way to look at it, as long as your company can weather the damage.
Mm-hmm.
So there are stories of other managers doing the same thing.
All right. Let's talk about the significant issues that could be the result of just the family we grew up in that are still unresolved as it relates to business.
If you go out to the BibleandBusiness.com website, you're going to see this article. It's called The Top 10. You're going to see this article on the homepage there, or at least a link to it. And the article is actually entitled, as you set it up at the beginning, the top 10 ways that managers demoralize their staff. And the number one way that I put down was that more than likely they have significant abuse and family of origin issues that are unresolved. In every person that I have met who does these kinds of things that I list out in the article, whether they're a pastor, whether they're a business owner, whether they're just a manager of a project. If you dig into their past, you'll find that they had real abandonment issues, real abuse issues, and that they just had a highly dysfunctional family. And so how they view relationships, how they do people, how they do relationships is just so messed up that it bleeds through in the workplace. And yet it's not seen as a personal issue that this person needs to work on. It's seen as a management issue that needs to be resolved. I would say that if you're a manager in this boat, what you need first is the transforming power of Jesus Christ in your life and the Holy Spirit to transform you in ways that you cannot yourself. And secondly, you need to get some counseling and resolve some of these family of origin issues.
How do employees address this issue when they feel that clearly what you've just said, Bill, is probably what they're living? They've got a boss that they know has got these unresolved issues. How do they survive today?
The way that you survive, I think, is two ways. First of all, you ask the Lord to give you a supernatural love and acceptance for this person that you would not normally have. And secondly, you really start to pray that this person will come around and begin to see what I call derailers, and see if God can't start intervening in their life. If you're in a larger corporation with an HR firm, you might go talk to the HR staff and see what they can do there. Otherwise, if you really have some guts, you can go in and talk to your boss directly.
Hmm. A for effort today, Bill. This is good stuff.
Is it?
Oh, it's really good stuff.
Oh, thanks.
And again, we all have a way of dealing with taking our issues to God first. Let's go straight to God first with our
always
concerns.
Always go to God and always check your own heart before you start to check somebody else's.
Yeah. All right. Bill English, thank you so much.
You bet.
BibleandBusiness.com is his website. And thank you so much. I'll see you next week.
You bet.
It's 26 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break. And there's Dolly Parton. Nice going, Rebecca. Be back in a minute.
Feel free to stop by on your way to work. The Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio. If the front door's locked, use the secret knock.